the issue. The issue of emotions. You know, emotions and feelings, and they're always very, very confusing. I've worked for many, many years with a process called the intense feeling process. The idea of it being that if people have feelings, you take them as deeply into their feelings so that they're not frightened by them. People are afraid of what they feel. They're afraid and confused by it. Recently, I ran across the work of a hypnotherapist, a hypnotist, Cindy Brialetta. And Cindy had a thing called the five-path process. And I asked questions about it, and the more I asked about it and the more I met this person, the more I was convinced that there's a way of organizing a process of dealing with this so that it could actually bring you to quite a bit of enlightenment. So, Cindy, welcome to WBAI, first of all.
Thank you so much, Armand. It's a pleasure to be
here. And it's a pleasure also to work with you. You know, Cindy, I don't find many people who I run into for the first time, you know, who I consider, especially people who are in the therapy business or hypnotists, who I consider to be sane. You just seem to be really present, and I like that.
Thank you.
Let's start off with this idea of a five path. Can you tell me what a five path process is?
Yes. This is a process whereby we go into emotions that may be troubling to us, and we find their source, and we, in fact, diffuse that source. We express the emotion fully. We understand whatever event caused that feeling from a different point of view, and we let the emotions go. So we really set ourselves free from these troubling emotions. And what's important about that is that emotions drive our behavior. And so frequently, if we have emotions that are under the surface, boiling under there, they may cause behaviors that we're not so happy with in our lives.
Well, when you say emotions, let's clarify. What is an emotion? What's a feeling? What's the difference between the two?
Well, in this sense, we're using the words interchangeably, feeling or emotion. So an emotion is something like happiness. An emotion is something like anger, something like fear. And we tend to think that some emotions are good, and some emotions are bad, like love. We think that's a good one. Happiness, we think that's a good one. Fear, anger, sadness, we call those bad emotions because we don't like how they feel. But in this system of thinking, the idea is that all emotions are good. All feelings are good. And they all serve some purpose in our lives. Even the ones that don't feel that good to us serve some purpose in our lives.
Oh, I hate feeling angry.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I can't stand it. But angry is so easy for some people, you know?
Absolutely.
But you say even feelings like anger are valuable.
Absolutely, because they tell us that something needs attention in our lives. So let's take anger, since you mentioned that as an example. Anger can be telling us that we perceive that something that's happened to us is not fair. And so we react in a kind of self-preservation way. We react with this anger. And we get mad. And that's good, because that tells us, I need to look at this situation. And I need to, first of all, figure out, is something really not fair, or is it just my perception that something isn't fair? And then what can I do about it? How can I solve this problem?
So if someone's really angry at their mate, for example, and they're really angry at their mate and they feel angry all the time, and there's no real logical reason why they're angry, and they come to you and they say, hey, help me with this, Cindy. How do I get to the bottom of it? What are you going to do?
Well, if someone is really angry all the time, even in the absence of right now real-time triggers for that anger, I'm going to think there's something in their past that has happened that has caused them to be especially likely to be experiencing this anger all the time. And we know that we've seen this all the time. People, we call it overreacting, right? There's a situation that seems like maybe it's not that big a deal and someone will absolutely blow up about it. That's a real flag that says that's not just about what happened this minute. That's about something that happened in our past that has sensitized us to respond in this way.
So overreactions, you would say in general, as I would agree, an overreaction is simply saying this is a reaction that has some validity to it, but the nature of the energy that you're putting into it tells me that this reaction that you're having is symbolic of an entire life of frustration with this issue.
Exactly.
So if, for example, if you ignore somebody and then they overreact by screaming at you because you ignore them, they could be yelling at you and screaming at you, but you know if you're somebody who's sensible, you say, boy, that person's overreacting.
Absolutely.
Well, what if somebody, now we're going to go into the five-path process, but what if somebody is overreacting and there's somebody you love? Let's say, Cindy, that you had a daughter who was 17 years old and she's screaming at you, I hate you, I hate you, I wish I was never born, and she's screaming at you at the top of her lungs. But you love this child.
Right.
What do you do at that point?
Well, at that point, you let the child know that you love them. You say, I love you, and I accept you even in your anger. Your anger is okay with me. Because it is okay. We're allowed to be angry. You know what? We're even allowed to overreact. We're allowed. All our emotions are permissible. We have to watch out about our behaviors. You know, we're
right.
not allowed to cross the line into abusive behaviors. But our emotions and their expression are allowed and, in fact, encouraged. Because if we hold those emotions in, if we don't express them, they don't disappear. They go deep, and they stay there, and they cause more problems. And that's how we can overreact in the future to other situations, because we keep pressing it down. We're pressing it down. We're trying so hard to keep that emotion out of consciousness, out of our expression, that eventually it bubbles over. And so for some people, it bubbles over in an emotional way with an emotional explosion, and for some people, it bubbles over in a physical way and causes some illness or some discomfort in the body. So we really need to deal with our emotions. We need to express them. We need to let them go. And, you know, unfortunately in our society, that's not really encouraged. We're really encouraged to put them down. Get rid of them. Don't express them. I don't want to see it. I can't handle your emotions. That's what it really is.
Move to Connecticut.
Exactly.
All right. So, this is Armand DeMille speaking with Cindy Brialetta about the five-path process. So, it's a five-path process. It's a process.
Yes.
A person walks in, right? You have five. Does that mean five-path mean five sessions?
Not necessarily. It's five phases.
Five phases of a process, right. Of cleansing yourself of unwanted or understanding unwanted emotions.
Exactly.
Five phases, each one takes 5 years, so it's 25 year. No?
No, this is very brief work. We're talking a session or two, or at most three per phase.
Okay.
So it's really fast.
What would phase one look like?
Phase one is really the session where we call it the direct suggestion session. And this is the kind of hypnosis session that most people are familiar with, where you go to a hypnotist and you learn something about hypnosis. You know, Armand, a lot of people have a lot of fears and misconceptions about hypnosis because they've seen strange things in the movies. And really, real hypnosis is nothing like that. That's just Hollywood. So it's a time to really learn that this is safe and this is a really careful environment and you're going to be okay here. It's a time for us to get to know each other, for me to get to know who you are and what your issues are and what you really want for your life. And it's a time for us to learn and to trust each other. And it's a time to just, you know, get some suggestions going that will start moving you in the direction that you want to go. And it's also a time to let you know that you can be hypnotized, because really one of the biggest fears that people have is that they're not hypnotizable. And it turns out that anyone who's willing to be hypnotized can be hypnotized with the right methods. And so this is all what the first phase is about, getting to that point where you feel comfortable with the process.
Why hypnosis? Why do we need the hypnotic part of it? Why don't we just use our conscious mind? Why do we have to use a hypnotic mind?
Well, because the hypnotic trance is really the gateway to the unconscious mind. And that's where all this stuff is. You know, that's where the past is. The past is not here in the conscious mind, except when we pay attention to it in the moment. The past is there. It's in our unconscious minds. It's stored there. These feelings that we've been pressing down for a whole lifetime, that's where they are. They're in the unconscious mind. So this is a direct route to get there. This is the easy way.
So if you, through hypnosis, you get a person to relax, you give them a suggestion, suggestions about creating their life a little better, and that's phase one. When does phase one end? I mean, what's the sign that a person has completed phase one?
When the person is easily able to enter the hypnotic trance and is comfortable with the process.
Now, when we say hypnotic trance, I think about people in Haiti walking around, you know, doing voodoo with their arms outstretched in ambulism.
Right.
You know, this is not hypnotic trance.
Right.
Hypnotic trance is a point of relaxation where what?
Well, you know, it's... Interestingly enough, we do use relaxation as part of hypnosis, but it's not an absolute requirement for hypnosis, to be in trance. Trance is really a point of focused concentration. In fact, you know, we can measure brainwaves, right? And so when we measure the brainwaves of people in trance, we notice that the brainwaves are the same as when someone is awake. This is a waking state. It's not a sleeping state. Relaxed and concentrating. So it's really a state of focus where you're paying attention to what's important right now. And what's important right now is what we're working on.
So it's an alert calm and you're present at all times.
Absolutely. Yes, you are present at all times. And this is surprising to many people because people think you're asleep or you're, quote, unconscious and you don't know what's going on. Nothing could be further from the truth. You're absolutely there the whole time. You're absolutely aware of what's going on. And, in fact, you're always in control. And this is something that's very important as well because people often think that when you're in a hypnotic relationship with someone that the hypnotist is in control of you. That's nothing could be further from the truth. You're always in control. You're free to reject any suggestion you don't like. You're free to end the process whenever you choose.
All right. And then after that, where does it get really scary?
Okay. So the place where it gets really scary is when we move on to the next phase. And the next phase is where we really start going into the emotions. And whatever emotion it is that we need to take care of. Now, the most frequent emotions we need to take care of are fear, anger, and guilt. And this is what this process is really all about. It's really about helping you to release your fears and misconceptions, your anger, and your guilt. And so we start with fear. And we use a process that's called age regression in order to deal with this fear. And age regression, you can think of it this way. You can think of it as riding a time machine into your own past. And so that's what we do. We have a little time machine in our heads, and we can ride that time machine into our past. And when we do that, our goal is to find the root cause of this emotion that's troubling you. When is the first time you ever experienced this emotion? We call that first time, we call that the initial sensitizing event. And that's the time that really, it's what it sounds like, it's initial, it's the first time that you became sensitive to this kind of emotion and this kind of pattern in your life. It's where we establish patterns. And what happens at this first event frequently is that we develop some misconception about ourselves. And the frequent misconceptions that we develop
is... Well, give me an example now. First event might happen in a crib.
It could.
Easily in a crib. Because every feeling that we ever had, we had to feel once early on, right?
The first time, absolutely.
Now, just in a crib, just as a baby, there are a whole bunch of emotions you go through. You go through outrage, you go through, you know, a whole bunch of feelings.
Absolutely.
And you're saying that part of the process here is to ride the vehicle of the emotion. You take an emotion like guilt. And you could take guilt and you could say, feel guilt now, feel guilt yesterday, feel guilt a year ago, feel guilt all the way back.
Absolutely. And we can ride that emotion all the way back to its source because, in fact, one of the ways that our minds store memories is by emotion. It's one of the indices, you know, one of the little file systems that we use to store our memories is emotion. So we can indeed take a feeling and we can amp that feeling up and we can ride it all the way back to the first time we ever experienced it.
And when you do, as you're going back, you could find periods at which you had to make a decision. And in a child's mind, in an infant's mind, they have to make a decision.
Absolutely.
So an infant says, I'm hungry and I need, I'm dirty and I need my mother and I'm crying and my mother doesn't show up.
Exactly.
And my father shows up and he says, shut up.
Exactly.
You're waking me up.
Exactly.
Okay, now, I have to make a decision.
Right.
This emotion is not a very safe emotion.
Right.
I better not cry.
Absolutely.
He'll kill me. He'll throw me out the window.
Absolutely.
So I'll turn this emotion off.
Exactly.
I won't feel it.
Exactly. I'll keep it stuffed down as deep as I can. And you know
and
what?
And I'll move to Connecticut.
Right. Okay. Your Connecticut listeners are going to be calling you.
I know. I always kid them about this.
Right. Right. And so emotions become unsafe. And you know what? It takes an awful lot of energy to keep those emotions under wraps. It really takes a lot of our energy to keep that under wraps. Because that's
and
not
I think
we're
that's a good
doing.
Point, Cindy, because, you know, it's not only that you have repressed the emotion, pushed it down, but you have to keep it down.
Absolutely.
Because it's a living thing.
That's right.
And it bubbles.
It's bubbling. That's right. The fire's under the pot.
And every time it bubbles, every now and then it kind of blurts out like, you know, a lava. It's like
exactly.
Kind of shooting out of a volcano.
Think of the cauldron, you know, with
right.
the fire underneath it. And each of these events just builds up the fire, adding more and more sticks on that fire. And eventually that cauldron's going to bubble over.
So what you've got to do is you've got to, if you try to find out what decision did I make.
Mm-hmm.
I remember somebody once told me, a young man told me he was beaten badly and he called his family for help, his mother. Mm-hmm. His father was already gone. And he called his mother for help and his mother said, no, I'm not coming home this time because you're always ruining my having a good time. And he remembers laying on the floor and making the decision at age 8 that I will never, ever, ever need anybody again. And he remembered the decision. He remembered making that decision in a therapeutic process. During a therapeutic process, we uncovered his making that decision, and by making that decision, he looked at the pain that was associated with that decision.
Right.
I have no parents.
Yeah.
I have no mother.
Yeah.
I have no father.
And that's so sad.
Yeah.
And we're allowed to be sad about that. You see, that's what most people don't get. We're allowed to be sad about those truly sad things in our lives. That's welcome, because that's normal.
And the decisions that we make as kids are decisions that are guided by other people's needs.
Yes.
Don't cry.
Right.
Right? We
right.
don't want you to cry.
Because it's annoying.
Because it's annoying to us.
Exactly.
Not that it's, and you're bad for crying.
Exactly.
And so, therefore, what you say is, you say, I won't cry.
Right. Doesn't matter how bad it hurts. I'll pretend it doesn't hurt. I'll turn that off. I'll push it down. I won't cry because big girls don't cry.
In the process of uncovering this material, Cindy, it must be excruciatingly painful. People, if they're going through it, they must feel it must hurt like it never hurt before, because if you let it hurt the first time, you probably wouldn't have blocked it. So that means that you didn't let yourself feel it.
Right.
Like I remember somebody who said to me once, he remembered the day his mother died. And he turned off completely. He just didn't feel anything. So part of the process is being able to pull the person back, get the person back to wherever it was that this decision was made. But this is a very difficult process. You got to be very brave for this.
You do have to be brave.
I mean, most people just want to ignore it and go move to New Zealand.
Right. That's right. You know, there is a certain amount of courage that's involved in this process. Yes, there is courage. Here's the good news. You made it through the first time, so it's not going to kill you this time.
What do you mean?
Made it. You survived this event, whatever that event was, whether it was, you know, something that from an adult perspective would be considered a minor event or whether it was really an earth-shattering major event. When you were small, when you had far fewer resources than you have today, you made it through. You're still here. That's the proof. Okay? So it didn't get you the first time. It's not going to get you this time. You're going to be okay.
I know you're going to be okay. Listen, when you were just a sperm, right, you had to fight off 200 million other
sperm
in order to get here.
And I made it.
So you made it there, too. Is that...
That's right.
That means it's not going to hurt so much it hurts.
It will hurt. There's no question about it. I tell my clients that this is like walking through the fire, right? You have to be willing to walk through the fire. There is an other side. That's the thing. We don't know that. That's kind of a thing. Since we're so used to pushing our emotions down, we don't know there's an other side. There's a side. When you get to the other side, you know what's there? Peace. Really. There's healing. There's peace. It feels good. You know what clients say to me at the end of these sessions? I feel so much lighter. That's what it is. It's this lightness because there is an other side. And if we just take our courage in both hands, and, you know, this, of course, we create an incredibly safe environment for this, right? There's nothing that could possibly happen in a session that I can't handle. I tell my clients that as well. There's nothing that could possibly happen. I've seen it all. There's nothing that could possibly happen that I can't handle, and we can't handle together. So we create this very safe environment where it's okay. Go ahead, scream. It's okay. Cry. Cry your eyes out. I've had clients literally curl up in a fetal position and cry like infants with that sound. You know that mm-hmm. sound that infants make when they cry? Just like that. That wah-wah cry, mm-hmm. that sound, right? And we let it all out. We hold nothing, but we just let it all out. And, oh, my goodness, after so many years of holding that and holding that and holding that, it feels so good to just let that go.
And, of course, you know, people will very often risk physical pain. It's okay.
Absolutely.
But there's something about emotional pain that has a kind of an abyss.
Yeah.
You know, related
We've learned
to it.
To
it's
fear
like
it.
We're so afraid of it.
Yeah, that's what it is. We're afraid of our feelings. And here's the time, if you ever wanted to be really fearless, here's the time to become fearless. And well, fearless is not really the right word. It's really courageous because no one's without fear. You know, that would be bad. I mean, imagine the unfortunate situations you'd get yourself into if you literally had no fear. So we don't really want to be fearless. We want to be courageous. We want to feel the fear and do it anyway. You know, that's trite, right? It's become a cliche, but that's what we want our lives to be. We want to be able to do what we choose to do and not let our emotions get in the way, while we acknowledge that we want to have emotions, we want to feel alive, we want to feel. Without feelings, we're dead, really. You know, that's people who get to the point where they can no longer feel their feelings. We call those people depressed, and no one wants that. No one wants to be without feelings. The only reason we do that is because we're so scared.
I've always thought of emotions as having, as each person having a certain amount of emotions that they allow themselves to feel. And I would sometimes quantify it. I'd give it a number, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much anger do you allow yourself to feel? So you might say I could allow myself from 1 to 10 to feel like an 8, right? That's as most. And then what happens is after a while, if you allow yourself to feel only an 8 out of your 10, and then you stop before you get to that. The next time maybe it's 7, the next time it's 6, the next time it's 5. As you get older, you lose your emotions. And as you get older, I've watched so many people, you know, who start in their 60s, they start becoming numb. And it's like, almost like nature is preparing them to die. Let's take away their emotions, let's take away their feelings, let's take away their regrets. Let's empty them out. So that we could put them, you know, send them out on the ice and just let them die. Without your emotions and without attending to your feelings and without having your feelings, you're really, a part of you is dying.
Absolutely.
You know, and
it doesn't have to be that way.
So many people it is.
I know.
You know, I remember someone recently said they had gone to a party, and they went to a party where there was no one there was alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what they were talking about. They were talking about everybody there had no emotions, had no feelings. Everybody was just functioning, thinking and talking from the top of their heads. My guest is Cindy Briolotta, who we're talking with her about the five-path process, and it's a process of getting people to clarify their emotions. I like it, by the way. I mean, I've been a student of this for many years, not this particular process, but I like what it does. We talked about phase one. We talked about the direct suggestion and the what happens in phase two. You talked about the age regression. Now, age regression, what is emotional resonance?
Emotional resonance means that emotions that we have in the present have a connection with emotions that we've had in the past.
Okay, so the resonance is it resonates with the past.
It resonates with the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now you take a person through that. Now, is that a longer phase than the first phase? Does that take more sessions? Or
it may. It may take longer. It may take a couple of sessions to really get to the root cause, the first event. Sometimes we find events that are not the first event, and we really want to get all the way down to the first event and clear that one.
How do you know it's a first event rather than a first prime or something?
Right. Well, we have it's really simple. There's a simple question that I ask to find out if it's a first event. And that simple question is this feeling that you're feeling right now, is that brand new? Or is that something that you've felt before? Like, uh-oh, here we go again. So if the answer is that's brand new, we do a check to make sure that it really is brand new. And
now, you're saying while the person is going through the process,
absolutely.
You ask them if this feeling is brand new. But if they're going through the process, the feeling can't be brand new because they felt the feeling before they came in that day.
No, I'm talking about during the regression. When we've gotten to age 6, right, and that's where we are, and we're experiencing an event from age 6 where this emotion was present.
Now, you say experiencing an event.
Yes.
You mean talking about an event?
I mean literally experiencing it.
You mean going back there and being 6 years old?
And being 6 years old. That's right. Which is, that's kind of the glory of doing this with hypnosis. We can be 6. We can be 2. We can be any age at all in our minds. Because it's all in there. We've been 6. And it's stored in there. Everything is stored in there. So we can literally take our little time machine and go back and be 6 again. And that's what's actually important about this process. There are other processes that don't ask you to be 6 again, that do it from a distance, as if you're watching a movie. In this process, we want to feel it. So we be 6 again. That's what we do.
So then you're going into this age regression, and you're living in that moment. I mean, you're
in
sitting in a room, and you feel like a child.
Exactly.
Now, I'm going to say one thing about you, Cindy. I've met a lot of people who have been therapists, psychologists, social workers. And I wonder, when I look at most of them, how I would feel safe being around them. Safety is such an important key here.
Absolutely.
And you have this energy. It's like this kind of beautiful mothering energy that is so fine. Cindy Braillotta, who's got this kind of sparkle in her eye as she sits with you. I can imagine you smiling and having tears in your eyes as you watch somebody go through their early primal pain.
Armand, I consider it such a privilege.
That's what I would think. Yeah.
That clients let me be there for those moments. And I really feel like I am so grateful to my clients for letting me be a part of this experience with them. And clients frequently tell me that they can feel me there as if I'm in that scene with them, even though I was never there. I frequently get clients telling me that they can feel me there.
And you can see how it would feel safe. This is Armand DeMille, Cindy Braillotta. We're talking about the 5-path process. We're talking about how you get clear with your emotions and what you may be able to do with yourself in order to access your own feelings, which we're going to go to as soon as we get back from our break. We're going to take a short break, then I'll play you a little music to wake you up, and then after that we'll come right back. DJ MFR, and that's the intro. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. A little boppy music for you, Cindy. This is Cindy Briolotta, who's with us. It's Briolotta or Briolotta?
Briolotta.
Briolotta. Briolotta, who's with us. I've been working with Cindy recently, and she goes through this process called the five-path process. And we talked at first about the introductory part where she sits with you, and then she does. Now, what's the informed child technique?
The informed child technique is part of the age regression process. And the idea of it is this. Have you ever said, boy, I wish I knew then what I know now? That's the idea behind this, because we always wish that we had the knowledge and experience in the past that we have now. So with the informed child technique, what we do is while we're in the age regression process, while we're being 6 years old, as we were talking about earlier, we bring the adult client back to talk with the child and to let the child know what the child needs to know about that event. Because what frequently happens when we have these events that happen to us in our lives that hurt us or anger us or whatever, you know, whatever emotional tone they have, they often come with misconceptions about ourselves, like, maybe I'm not lovable, or maybe I'm stupid, or something. You know, we gather these ideas about ourselves, these beliefs that are erroneous, in fact. They're wrong. Because we are good, we're fine, we're pretty, we're smart, we're whatever we need to be. So the adult child goes back in time to meet the little hurt child, to explain things, to explain the situation, to help that child get through this process without being hurt by it again. So that's what the informed child technique is. It's literally taking the mind of the adult client with all the experiences the adult has had since they were six, bringing all of that experience back to 6 years old to say, you're really okay.
I remember a case where a young woman named Mary, I remember, had a sister named Ruth, and her mother, they were born in Colombia, and the mother, in order to control them, said the following: if either of you get upset, I'm going to punish you both. This way, the mother, who was working very hard and was 16 years old, a 16-year-old mother in Colombia, no man around, she's trying to make things work, and she tells him, if either of you get in trouble, I'm going to punish you both. So Mary was the good kid. She was the good child, right? And she would, every now and then, Mom would come home and just punish her. And Mary couldn't figure out why she was being punished, so Mary figured she was bad. But Mary had a problem because she was feeling bad because her mother was punishing her, but she didn't do anything bad. So she figured she must be bad, that she must be a bad child, period. Something's wrong with her. Through a process of therapy, she went back. I remember she regressed to the very time when she was being beaten. And she brought into that childhood the adult awareness. And I remember the moment, oh, Cindy, I tell you, it sends chills through my spine, when she turned around and she said to her mother, oh, I get it. You're beating me. It's not for me. It's for Ruth. It's not because I'm bad, it's because Ruth was bad. And she starts screaming, it's not for me, it's for Ruth, it's not for me, it's for Ruth, it's not for me, it's for Ruth. And then the big sob comes, she says, and you know it. And you know that you're punishing me, and it's not fair. And that was the big heartbreak. And up until that moment, this woman's life had been so totally, totally frozen. But when she found out that she was not broken, that there was nothing wrong with her, that she was not a bad person, but that this punishment was, even though, you know, Mom may have been doing it, and that's all that Mom could do, you know, because we always make excuses for our parents and what they do for us. But for her, the breakthrough was phenomenal. It's not for me, it's for Ruth. In fact, I have a recording of that very moment, which I'm going to dig out and we'll play it. It's chilling. It's amazing. Now you talk about after you uncover these emotional moments and you relive them and go through them, you eventually bring the adult, knowledgeable you back to the child, powerless you, and that begins to free you, right? Now, that's a beginning. When that happens, what's the next step?
Okay, so once we've uncovered what is the root cause of this problem, and once we've really let these emotions go, finally, that we've been holding on to, we just let them go. And once we really understand that we're okay, we're really lovable, we're capable, we're smart, we're whatever we need to be, once we really get that, once we believe that, that's when phase two is complete. So we've come to this breakthrough, as you said, with Mary, and I've witnessed this very same thing over and over and over again, this incredible moment of, oh my God, I am good. I'm lovable. I have value. This, it gives me chills too. This is really a powerful, incredible moment.
That's where you and I get humbled.
Exactly.
You know, when we watch this happen, ooh, here it is unfolding right in front of us. You know, each one of us, each one of the people I know who do this work, you know, have these moments when they see it unfolding, just changing in front of your eyes. And then what happens? Now, you know, most therapists would milk this forever. Most therapists would keep this client around for years. What do you do?
Right. Well, we don't do that. So one interesting thing, though, when we have these kind of breakthroughs, this is a very good time to get new suggestions about how perhaps we'd like to be from now on, because this creates this state of flux in the mind that says, well, now I have this incredible new understanding. It's like a whole vista opens up. So here's a great opportunity to give, you know, really helpful positive suggestions for change in the person's life. So that's part of what we do. Really at the end of each one of these phases, we're giving really helpful, positive suggestions, which, by the way, these suggestions have been requested by the client. These are not things that,
you
know.
Can you give me an example of a helpful, positive suggestion that would happen at the end of a session? Like, take Mary, the case of Mary. How would Mary now, who sees that she is being punished not because she's bad or broken or something wrong with her, now what would be, are these like affirmations? What do they do?
Similar to affirmations, and or suggestions for new ways to behave. So it would really depend on what Mary wants for her life now. So, you know, it could be even something as simple as you now recognize your value. You know who you are. It could be that simple. Or it could be a real behavioral change suggestion. You know, frequently people who are stuffing their emotions are doing something that doesn't serve them to distract from those emotions. And it could be anything, you know, people overeat, they smoke, they drink, they gamble, they do whatever, they get, you know, they get into troubling relationships over and over and over again. So the suggestions can be really anything that's in line with what the client wants for her life. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I leave it vague. Like I had one client where all I said to her was, you are now free to act in your own best interest. You are now free to act in ways that serve your highest good. That was the two really powerful suggestions that I gave her, and she ran with those. I mean, she really was able to make sweeping, incredible changes in her life based on the fact that, oh, now I'm free to act in my own best interest to serve my highest good. How about that?
So let's take those words again. Let's just slow that down.
You are now
free.
Yeah?
You are now free.
Good. To act in your own best interest. You are now free to act in ways that serve your highest good.
Cindy, write a letter. Cindy, okay, so what goes on after we get that? Now we go into this thing called forgiveness. You know, and it's always scary whenever I hear forgiveness. To me, people always want to forgive before they're willing to feel. You know, they have their parents, you can't blame my mother, what the hell. You know, she had to work, so therefore she punished me. You know, and so she punished me instead of my sister, or, you know, so So what about this? When do you get to the forgiveness phase?
Right. So this is a good point, and this is why we do the forgiveness after the age regression. This is why we deal with these feelings first, why we feel them, why we process them, and why we let them go. And by the way, in the forgiveness phase, we're not done with feelings yet. We've gotten some fears and misconceptions and maybe sadness and some anger or whatever, but now we're really going to deal with anger. And I want to say something about forgiveness, because most people are afraid of forgiveness because we don't understand what forgiveness means. You know, we say forgive and forget, and we think forgive means condone. But in fact, forgive does not mean condone. It doesn't mean that what you did to me was okay, because it wasn't. And it doesn't mean I'm going to forget, because I want my lessons. I need to remember. I'm just not going to have that emotional charge anymore. I'm just not going to hate you anymore. I'm not going to spend my whole life being angry with you, because that's hurting me. Anger eats us up inside. That's what it does. I had a client who was really deeply hurt by her ex-husband 20 years ago. Mm. So for 20 years, she came to me for weight loss, this client. She was extremely obese because for 20 years she was punishing herself for what her husband did to her. She was eating insanely. So our anger hurts us. It really, most of the time, does not hurt the person that we're angry with. So the idea here is to set ourselves free. We let go. We forgive. Not for the other person. We forgive for ourselves. This is a gift we give ourselves. I forgive you and I set you free. More importantly, I forgive you and I set myself free. So that's what we're doing with forgiveness work.
That's tricky stuff because, you know, it's again, everybody who thinks they set themselves free by forgiving, you know, they think that. It's a really tricky balance because it reminds me of something Bhagwan Rajneesh. Well, you know who that was way back when. He once said about being at giving up sex. People, they talked about, you know, how at the highest level you give up sex. And he said you can't give up sex unless you've once owned it. You know, that giving it up, I mean, just giving it up because you're celibate or impotent, right, that doesn't mean anything. You're not giving anything up. When you give up sex after you've owned it, after you've had it, after you've had a right to it, that's different. And that reminds me of anger as well. People all want to give up anger. That's why they meditate. You know, and I think they go to meditate and they want, as soon as they, I'm not going to feel those feelings. I'm not going to feel those feelings. I'm going to let those feelings go. I'm going to let them go in one ear and out the other ear. And all these meditative processes, which meant I'm trying to get rid of them. I don't want them inside me. And that's what people call forgiveness, getting rid of the feelings. You're saying it is imperative that you own the feeling, feel the feeling, go through the feeling, and then when you're complete with it, don't hang on to it, because so many people would love to stay perennial victims forever. Oh, my mother treated me wrong. Look at me. That's why I can't get a job. I can't this, I can't that. And that's where the forgiveness of the other person, who may have been the person who created your grief, where the forgiveness of them sets you free, not them free. They may still have a bunch of condoning. They may have a still bunch of amends to do. You know, they may have a whole bunch of stuff that they yet have to do. But from your side, I release you. And as I release you, as being the person who caused my grief, I release myself from my dependency on you. A very wise man, Peter Hogan, who I've spoken to you about, once said to me that anger is one of the greatest signs of dependency. He said, if you're angry at somebody, it means you need them. Because if you need them, you didn't need them, you wouldn't be mad at them. Of course there's anger over injustice and political injustice and other things that take place, which I fully understand. But to have a relationship with someone and to hold on to your anger, to hold on to resentment and to hold on to that, is in a way saying, I need you to identify myself by staying angry with you. Forgiveness, even though it sounds like, you know, you're giving somebody a benediction, you know, I forgive you, you're really saying, in effect, I let you go. I let you out of my life. I let you go out of my life on that level that you were there. If you forgive a parent who abused you, you no longer really have a parent. It isn't like you get the parent for the first time. You really let them go. Don't you find that to be true?
Absolutely.
It's not like the good news is, oh, now that I forgive you, I can finally have a mother. No. Now that I forgive you, I realize I never had a mother and I never will.
Right, and I'll be my own mother. You know, I'll mother myself in the way that, unfortunately, you could not. And, you know, Armand, this is not a cavalier forgiveness that we're doing here. We first express the anger in hypnosis, okay? We're not expressing the anger literally to the offender.
We do it in the session.
We do it in the session, in our minds. We do this with...
Well, not only in your minds. You could do it verbally.
Yes. This is a version of Gestalt chair therapy.
Yeah.
Where we go into... In our minds, we go into a room with two chairs, and the client sits in one chair, and then in the other chair, the person who hurt them the most appears. And we have a dialogue with that person, and we let them know every awful thing they ever did. Here's how you hurt me. And here's how you made me feel. And because of you, this is what happened in my life. And we just throw it all at them, and any words are permitted, any amount, you know, screaming, yelling, crying, whatever you need to do to get this out. Any cursing, whatever it is you need, this is all welcome because this is the place for it. This is the time for it. This is the safe space where, you know, most of the time you really can't go up to people, and it would be, you know, pretty inappropriate to do it, to really do this with another person, to scream and curse and say whatever you want, right? That would be really inappropriate. That's verbal violence, right? So we're not going to do that in real life. So this is, you know, in the session, in trance, we can really have this moment of saying, this is how you hurt me. And I want you to own this. I want you to acknowledge that you hurt me. And I didn't deserve that. That was wrong. What you did to me, that was wrong. I've had so many clients at the beginning of this process say, what you did to me was unforgivable. That's what they start with. That was unforgivable. And then in the end, we come to forgiveness. We always do. We come to forgiveness because the forgiveness is about you and it's not about them.
There are 10 keys to forgiveness.
Right. So the 10 keys are, first of all, we uncover the reason for the behavior. Now, most of the time, the people who have hurt us the deepest are the people who are closest to us. They're our parents. They're our siblings. They're the people we love the most. These are the people who've hurt us the most. So we want to know why. Why did you do this? So we ask the offender, why did you do this? And most of the time, the offender has a reason, like Mary's mother. She wasn't being cruel to Mary just for the fun of it.
Now, wait a minute. You don't ask the offender out loud. You don't call up the offender on the phone and say, why did you do this?
We don't call up the offender on the phone. What happens is that the client then takes the point of view of the offender.
And that's really important part.
This is very important.
This is part of the beauty of this empty chair technique. There's that you take both roles.
Yes.
That you see it from the other side. And so in this, you ask the person, you actually get a reason as to why.
Right.
Why couldn't you love me? The answer appears. Because I couldn't love anybody, because I couldn't love myself, because nobody ever loved me. And you get to feel it. Okay, well, we've only got about 5 minutes, and I know there's a whole bunch of steps here.
Okay.
So let's run through them. Uncover any pain that the offender may have experienced.
Right. Uncover regret over hurting the client. Again, these are people who love us. They're sorry they hurt us. And then if the intention was not to hurt the client, which frequently it wasn't, we uncover that as well. What was your intention? Did you really want me to hate you? Did you really want me to go through my whole life being in pain every minute? Is that what you wanted?
Why could you never love me? A young girl said to her father, and finally she came up with the answer, because my mother was jealous of me. Because your mother said to me that if I got anywhere near you, she would get jealous, so I stayed away from you. And that became a discovery. And she said, that's why my father would never come anywhere near me. He was afraid.
That's right. And this sort of thing is there all the time. And you know what? Our clients already know it. They already know this.
It's somewhere in there.
That's right.
It's like how to make...
Right, and this is how, exactly, this is how they can do this, because they already know. It's just been hidden because they were afraid to look at it, because they were afraid it would make them vulnerable.
Yeah.
And then if there's any positive intention behind the behavior, you discuss that. Like, some dads are really tough on their kids, and not because they want to hurt them, but because they want to make them strong. So this is, you know, frequently something we uncover with dads who've been really harsh. It's because I was preparing you for the world. That was my positive intention. I never meant to hurt you. So we discover a positive intention, if there was one. And then, of course, we have the offender express regret and, you know, say, I'm sorry. Literally, those words, I'm sorry. Please forgive me.
So you, when you're saying that, you mean you step into the role of the offender.
Absolutely.
And you experience the offender asking for forgiveness. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends, this is dramatic stuff. This is the kind of stuff that healing is made of. This is exactly the way it takes place. And I love it, Cindy, that you've put it in just a few ways. You know, it's just a few sessions. It's so much better than talking about this stuff forever.
Right.
You know? And then what is the next step?
So then we let the client know that the offender is not going to benefit from the forgiveness. You know, this forgiveness, this is for you. It's not for them. They're going to forget. Here's what we say. They're going to forget everything that happens as soon as the session is over. Right? So the offender cannot benefit from this. And we let the client know that they don't have to forget. Forgiving does not mean forgetting. And clients are even, you know, every once in a while, most of the time the offender is repentant and sorry and really does ask for forgiveness. Every once in a great while, we get an offender that just is not going to ask for forgiveness. They're going to just be defensive and justify themselves. And we can still get forgiveness even then, because we can have compassion for the fact that the offender can't even take responsibility.
You know, Cindy, I know by now people are a little confused because they think the offender is in the room. And, you know, you and I are going to have to take a little more time with this. I'd like to have you back this week or maybe next week. Next week, we'll talk a little more about this because, you know, it really is this idea of being able to have a dialogue with the offender in your mind. The fact that, you know, the person who hurt you the most is sitting right in your brain somewhere. They're occupying a room and they're affecting everything you do, and you can't get rid of them. Because you can't see them, yet you're totally aware of them if you allow yourself to be. That's something I'd love to talk to you about, the process of how we get to that. And just since we did talk about five phases, we're going to mention the other two phases and then get back to this at another time.
Right. The other two are forgiveness of self. So once we've forgiven those who have hurt us, then it's time to forgive ourselves and set ourselves free from guilt. So that's the fourth phase. And then the final phase is what we call parts mediation therapy. And that phase happens. We don't always do that, but in the case where there's some part of the client that still really wants to hold on to the dysfunction, we want to go and dialogue, again, in our minds, in the hypnotic session, we want to dialogue with that part of ourself that's not ready to let go and find out what they need to make them ready to let go.
Well, this is Armand DeMille with Cindy Brialetta. Cindy, if they want to get in touch with you, they can call 212-757-4488. We'll tell you how to get in touch with Cindy. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Cindy, I want to thank you so much because really your heart's in your work and you just shine. You shine. If you want a copy of today's program, you can hear it on thepositivemind.com or you can go to WBAI.org. There'll be a replay of this program. Send me an email, Armand@brainlink.com.